through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
And welcome into a Thursday edition of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We have a great program planned for you, as we do every single day. Going to catch up with Mike Salk coming up in about a half an hour. Lydia Cruz, Dragons insider, Seattle Dragons insider, will be joining us at 2 o'clock. For those of you who don't recognize that name, the Seattle Dragons, that's our new XFL team, and they're going to debut on Saturday. So we'll be talking to Lydia about that. But first, I feel like this entire offseason so far centers around one guy. Anybody want to take a guess as to who that is?
I already know the answer.
Pete Carroll, John Schneider.
Jadeveon Clowney.
No, yes.
Yay!
Jadeveon Clowney.
You knew the answer, Stacey.
Jadeveon Clowney. And I remember at the end of the season, you see certain people out there saying, oh, well, if the Seahawks don't re-sign Jadeveon Clowney right now, they're foolish. And then the narrative changes a little bit. You know, you can interpret his stats a certain way. Well, he's double-teamed all the time. You can make excuses for him. You can say he's really great. I mean, there's all kinds of different perceptions and opinions around Jadeveon Clowney. This morning, Brady Henderson of ESPN.com was on with Danny Gallant. Did I need help with that?
I was just saying it at the same time for
still,
emphasis.
You know, Stacey got her chance to host, and now she's been very
excited. I can't stop, Tom. I can't turn this off.
It's going to take, like, one more day for that to wear
Let's
off.
Let's see if the next word we're going to say is the same. One, two, three.
No. Did you host that show this morning?
No.
No, we're talking about still from, you know, the day you were out.
Okay, thanks for torpedoing the show. Anyway, Brady Henderson on with them this morning talking about what could happen with Clowney.
He's going to get the free agency, and as we all know, when guys get there, the price has the potential to skyrocket when every team can bid on him. And, I think even though he's coming off a season where he only had two sacks, he's still got a ton of pressure. He's still a marquee name. And I think that, you know, if he commands, you know, something in the neighborhood of, Khalil Mack got a couple of years ago, then if you're the Seahawks, you have to say, okay, yeah, we need this guy, but we also need more, because you saw that their pass rush was pretty ineffective with him. And so if it's just him, that's not going to be enough. And if he, gets that top of the market deal, are you going to have enough to get somebody else?
It's interesting that from my point of view, he didn't do enough to really warrant a huge, huge contract. And yet he seems to be in the position where he can dictate to the Seahawks or really any team, I want to be on a winner, so there better be another edge rusher on the other side.
Absolutely.
You better already have one.
Yes, and when you look at it from every single standpoint, if you talk about frontline guys, if you're clamoring for, in terms of the draft, known commodities, Clowney is as about a known commodity as you can get in this draft. It's a consensus.
Draft?
In the free agency, that he is one of the top five, top 10 free agents in this year's market. And for Clowney, I look at it and say, you sit here and look at his production before he got here. He's coming off of two seasons of 9.5, 9 sacks. That's not typically the guy that you're saying you want to pay $21 million to in terms of being your edge pass rusher. And this season, only having 3 sacks for the Seattle Seahawks. But as you mentioned, double teams. His pressure rate was still there, but Clowney to me is a complete player. He's not just a sack guy. He's not a one-trick pony. He's a disruptor in the run game as well. He's a total package type of guy. Now, to get that maximum production out of Clowney, and I agree with Clowney, if I'm looking at this, I not only want to go to a Super Bowl contender, but I also want to see what the Seahawks are going to do and how they're going to help me out as a player in terms of who they're going to sign along with me on that edge.
Okay, so let's go to the next cut here from Brady about what else the Seahawks may do.
I just think that, if it's going to be in that Frank Clark, territory, that DeMarcus Lawrence territory, are you better off just spending that money on two guys and spending maybe a little bit more on two guys like the Green Bay Packers did last year? Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, both, in terms of average, right around $30 million combined for the two of those guys, and they got a combined 25.5 sacks in the regular season. By the way, 4 more in the playoffs of Russell Wilson. Preston Smith had that killer sack on third down that really helped put the game away for Green Bay.
Yeah, what would you rather do? Spend that money that you've got available on two guys, let Clowney walk, or pay Clowney the big money and spend whatever you have left on somebody else on the other side?
I guess the question is, do you get a proven commodity because you know Clowney's good? He was your best defensive lineman last year. Or do you hope that you can find two guys? Because I think people look at Za'Darius and Preston Smith, or they look at Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett when he was here, and they think, oh, well, easy. They've done that before. But, I mean, what are the odds you can find two guys?
But I disagree with the premise that Brady's presenting here. This isn't an either-or situation. You are absolutely going to sign, if you do sign Clowney, you're going to sign Clowney, and you're going to sign another pass rusher to go along with it. This isn't one or the other. This isn't you only sign Clowney and you don't get another guy. This is the situation that Brady, I think, would make sense, is if you don't sign Clowney, now it gives you the ability to pay across the entire defensive line rather than just focusing on the edge rushers.
Or the rest of the team.
The rest of the team, sure. But what has been the priority, or what do you think the priority is going to be for this team? I think it's going to be on that defensive line. So I think if you're signing Clowney, then you're going to try and find somebody in that $8 to $12 million range. And luckily for the Seahawks in the free agent market, there's going to be a heck of a lot of those candidates that could be really good fits here that I think Seahawks fans should be excited about. And so you can absolutely still get that done, but it's now you're going to maybe – the question becomes, do you now sign Jaron Reed? If you sign both of those edge rushers, do you start going a little more cheaper or trying to find the bargains on the interior part of your defensive line? That's really where the question comes into when you sign Clowney. If you don't sign Clowney, you can get two, pretty solid edge rushers and put a little bit more money into the interior of your defensive line.
My issue personally on the defensive line is this, and I know a lot of people agree with me because we've gotten a bunch of calls along these lines. Fans are sick of the Seahawks trying to patchwork it together, regardless of what position group it is. They want impact players, whether it's coming through the draft or free agency. So I feel like that crowd wants to sign Jadeveon Clowney because he's the big name. My only thing with that is I think whoever ends up paying huge money for Jadeveon Clowney is going to end up really disappointed.
Why do you think that?
Because in the end, I just don't believe in him as that kind of player. At that money. I just don't.
Well, I think the one thing that does make him a bit different from some of the top tier pass rushers like A. Frank Clark is that
Khalil Mack, like Brady,
he excels more in run defense versus getting sack numbers. But he was second only to DeMarcus Lawrence in like his run defense grade from Pro Football Focus. So I think that people are used to looking at those numbers, and it is hard, admittedly, in a league where you're looking to stop these elite passers and where teams overall seem to focus less on the run to value a guy who can't get sacks. That said, you look back at some of what Pete Carroll said this year about Clowney, and he said, well, this is his first year in our kind of system. He's not only with a different, a 4-3 as opposed to a 3-4, but we think that he could put up bigger numbers with more experience there.
Improvement. But you know how Pete is, Stacey. Like, he makes excuses for guys until they're not here anymore.
He does, but I think that it's hard not to believe that sentiment about Jadeveon Clowney because it isn't just some guy he's talking about, and it isn't just a fourth-round pick defensive end that he's hoping is going to pan out.
That's
a former
true.
Number one overall pick who, when you watched him, not looking at his sack totals, not looking at those numbers, when you watched him on the field for Seattle, he was the most consistent performer on that line.
Clowney is a freakish talent. He's a freakish talent. And if you're surrounding him with other guys on that defensive line, I think you're going to see his production skyrocket to the point of where you were disappointed, Tom. I think people were disappointed to not see as high of sack numbers, but his disruption rate was right where you would want it to be on every aspect, in the passing game, in the running game. To me, this is a guy worth signing, worth bringing back, and I would gladly sign him back along with getting another significant pass rusher, and I think that would help him out tremendously in terms of getting the production that he would want.
If
you're saying bargain, hey, we're going to let him walk, and now you want to be able to invest more money within along the team or along the defensive line, that's fine, and I don't necessarily disagree with the premise, but you better be willing to spend that money and not leave anything left on the table.
That's completely fine. I mean, look, just because Pro Football Focus or whoever has the rankings out of these available pass rushers says that Jadeveon Clowney is the best available guy, that doesn't mean he's actually going to be the best performer in 2020.
Well, Yannick Ngakoue is actually the better sack getter.
That's fine.
He's the better sack guy. If you're looking for sacks, Yannick Ngakoue would be probably your guy that you would want to go after. But if you're looking for the complete package in a run game, in a disruptor in the run game and the passing game, I think Clowney has the absolute edge in that scenario.
Do you know where the Seahawks ranked in stopping the run in yards per game last year?
They were towards the bottom.
22nd,
exactly.
Yeah, but imagine if you didn't have any of those disruptive plays from Jadeveon Clowney, where they would even be at that point.
He was the only guy getting TFLs.
He was the only guy that was actually doing making explosive plays or disruptive plays in the backfield. To me, I'm not going to knock a guy when they had a horrendous defensive line as a whole, and now you're going to point to one guy for the entire lack of production in that whole group.
No,
I mean, I get he's a part of it.
I'm going to point to all of them, but if he's so great, I mean, look, Jaron Reed is not a bad – what you're saying is Jadeveon Clowney was the only saving grace on that line stopping the run. Nobody else could do it all year long. They were that bad?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm saying Jaron Reed did not perform the way that you were hoping he would perform.
I know that, but okay. I got three questions right now. We'll come back to this later.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
What type of pass catcher would you rather add? I was watching highlights last night of the Super Bowl with the Chiefs, and it occurred to me that they have really diverse weapons, not just dangerous weapons. They've got Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce. So if you're the Seahawks, what type of pass catcher would you rather add? A speedy guy like Hill or a big chain moving tight end like Kelce?
Man, that's a really good question, because the Kansas City Chiefs, they have speed at all positions. Receiver, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Travis Kelce, tremendous speed at the tight end position. I think when you really look at this group right now, what they're missing is Will Dissly. They're missing Will Dissly being out there healthy, that type of production, that type of reliable pass catcher on third down and in the red zone. If they could have that element all the way through the season, I think that this offense would be that much more explosive and dynamic. Unfortunately, Will Dissly is just too much of an unknown commodity. But adding an explosive playmaker to this down-the-field attack that the Seahawks have, I mean, it's always going to be welcome. But to me, my answer would be, get me a chain mover like a Travis Kelce.
I think my answer would be a Tyreek Hill. I actually go back to the video that Jake put together for 710sports.com did you look at specifically that 44-yarder? I know you talked about it when we were at hosting on Tuesday, and you said, really, there's no other receiver. It's not just beating coverage. There's no other receiver but Tyreek Hill who could get open there, and that specific combination between Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill that gets that 44-yard completion.
He broke his route off at 20 yards down the field. I mean, that... You just don't
do you know
do
what the
that.
Name of that is?
Ridiculous.
You know what the name of that play was?
What is it?
The Wasp.
The Wasp.
Yeah.
The Wasp play. It's basically a deep crossing route where he fakes out the defender at the last second and then turns the other way.
I think that I wouldn't, if I were this offense, I think I'd like a weapon like that. If my philosophy is what I'm leaning on, I'm counting on someone like Russell Wilson or a third down running back to pick up and move the chains when we need to, or a healthy Will Dissly when he comes back. What I want is another weapon you get out there with DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett for that deep ball to take some pressure not only off of them, but to get a game changer, a guy that can get you that. They don't win the Super Bowl without that 44-yard completion.
Agreed. By the way, I'm not making that up. I just happened to see them breaking down the play last night on TV.
On NFL Films? Or
no, it was actually on ESPN, and one of the players was talking about it. The name of the play is called the Wasp because of, I think, the way Hill moves or something. He moves like a wasp. I don't know. Next.
Number 2.
Is it fair to judge Jimmy Garoppolo by the one throw he didn't complete in the Super Bowl? Right now, 49er fans, no doubt, are arguing with one another over whether or not they can win a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo. If he makes that throw, they do. If he doesn't make that throw, they don't. And we know what happened there. But is it really fair to judge him or any quarterback that harshly by one throw that he didn't make?
I want to answer first because I might need Jake to help me remember a specific play. So I'm going to go back to Bill Barnwell's article. He wrote about who should have been the MVP, why he thinks Andy Reid outcoached Kyle Shanahan. He was on with us Tuesday. It was an awesome interview, but one thing I didn't get to ask him is he did talk about that long play that Garoppolo overthrew, but he said it's hard to blame him for that because the degree of difficulty for it was pretty high. Like, there were a good handful of starting quarterbacks who also might not have made that play. But that the harder thing to let go was like a pair of specific passes that were intended for George Kittle. Do you remember those? At least one of them?
Yeah, well, they were actually missed reads, and the ball did not go to George Kittle. They were wide open plays on second down, third down, on two different drives, and George Kittle's frustration was very visible as it was building up towards the end of the game, the fact that Jimmy was not finding him or looking for him when he was wide open. And I think that that's the part that factors into it. Is I don't think it's just the one throw, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
The one throw obviously is going to haunt you, and people are going to point to that. But I think it's the meltdown that Jimmy G had in the fourth quarter when you had wide open receivers and you had your best offensive weapon in George Kittle open multiple times. And so Shanahan is smoked for not running the football. Right or wrong, he dialed up passing plays, and the design was open and ready, and Jimmy didn't find it. So you see Patrick Mahomes rise up to the level in the right moment in the fourth quarter with 6 minutes left to go, and Jimmy Garoppolo fell at the bottom, absolutely fell out on him. So I don't know if you can absolutely write the book on Jimmy Garoppolo and just say that he is no good, he's never going to be good based off of this one performance. But it's going to take an awful lot for people for Jimmy to change that narrative after a pretty good year for his first full season as a starting quarterback.
Next.
Number three.
All right, we're going to grade last year's offseason, knowing what we know now. On the final day of the 2019 preseason, I felt like this is after they acquired Clowney. I thought that Schneider had an A-minus offseason. Mm-hmm. I thought acquiring Clowney at the last second, the draft that he had, trading Clark, getting all those picks, getting Ziggy Ansah. I mean, he was really one of the big pieces of that the entire summer. I thought it was an A-minus. Now, looking back, I can't go any higher than B-minus. What would you give it?
I would.
Then I've got a follow-up question, but go ahead.
Yeah, I would probably give that whole offseason for him probably, I'd say a B probably, because you look at it and I think for Clowney getting him, that was an absolute steal. Turning I would even say B+, turning, you know, four picks and trading Frank Clark into 11 picks and what they were able to get out of those draft picks, guys that were contributors that did make the roster for the most part, DK Metcalf involved in that. So there are Mike Iupati was a contributor for them all through the year. So overall, I thought that he had a pretty good offseason. What held him off from having a type of offseason to me is Ziggy Ansah and LJ Collier. Those two things, I think you can't give him an A based off of those two things.
I'm going to give him an A- still. I think that for a specific reason, I think Clowney was his best trade of the offseason. I think Metcalf was his best draft pick. The negatives would be Ansah, although I won't give like a full negative point because it was a late signing in May. And I think it was more of a, hey, you know, let's take a flyer on this guy and see what works than people think it was. Even though they had to pay him a lot, they didn't sign him until May. So he was a kind of third wave free agent signing. He wasn't a priority free agent.
They really
LJ Collier didn't work out. But, well, they had to trade Frank Clark to get the draft picks, and I think they knew they would probably take a step back in their pass rush. I don't think there was a way to replace what Frank Clark could do with a bunch of draft picks and free agents you were signing in May. But I think where he deserves more credit that we've kind of forgotten about is that Russell Wilson extension. It was in April. I think that takes it up to an A for me, and for that matter, Bobby Wagner.
Bobby Wagner. You know what? When I thought of that question, I didn't even consider that.
Well, because it feels like it was a lifetime ago, but I think that was the most important move that this franchise could have made in the offseason, and he got it done.
All right, I'll
change my answer.
I'll bump it up to a B+ from a B-.
Okay.
By the way, follow-up question. What kind of offseason grade do they need to have this year in order to get back to the Super Bowl.
Another A.
Yeah, they got
to
have.
Has to be another A.
Has to be another A.
Has to be another A.
We have to look back at this.
You don't
and
get
say,
to a Super Bowl with a C off season.
Sure you do.
Look,
no.
We were grading it off of
C's get degrees.
We were grading it basically off of draft picks and, you know, free agent trades and acquisitions. When you factor in Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson,
that
honestly, obviously is going to bump it up to an A type of offseason. But, you know, when you talk about the draft picks, I want to be able to look at their free agent acquisitions and their draft capital and say, their draft picks and say, this was an A bona fide class. That the guys that they drafted at towards the top were guys that contributed, that were impact players. The guys that they got in free agency doesn't need to be everybody. But their big-time signings that they end up going after are major contributors and guys that can really make a difference. Because if that's the case, we're looking, like we're talking about, our blueprint for the Seahawks to get to the Super Bowl in 2020. That's what's got to happen.
See, I think that they could have another B-minus offseason. Or not another, excuse me. I gave them a B-plus for last year. They could have a B-minus, get a couple of impact players, and I think be Super Bowl ready. I actually don't think that they're that far away. If they have an A offseason where they just hit on everything, the draft, free agents, and everybody's playing immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to go 15-1 and kill everybody. I just don't see that
happening.
Well,
and I think that an A offseason still includes room for mistakes. Someone just texted in and they said, hey, his fourth round pick didn't even make the team. And, you know, I think that there are still misses you're going to make. You're not going to hit on every single draft pick. You're not going to hit on every single free agent. But I think the important thing is where you concentrate your effort, where you spend your biggest contract, your priority free agent signing, and your high draft pick. Where was that impact, right? Mm-hmm. And LJ Collier, all right, that was your first round pick. It didn't work out this year. Give him time, but he did not contribute his rookie year. Your second round pick, DK Metcalf, that ended up being kind of a bargain. That he ended up being one of the best Seahawks rookie wide receivers in franchise history. One of the best rookies this year. Absolutely a contributor. So I think when I look at them this year, the question I'm asking is, okay, if we're all saying their biggest need is their pass rush and they're going to need two contributors there, in January, February, are we saying they got two contributors there? If they did, that might be enough for me.
In free agency.
Either way. Free agency, the draft. I think one of them is at least going to have to be free agency.
If you say two, but that's how I would define a B. Let's just say they got two impact players, okay, and everything else they missed on. I think that that's good enough, actually, to get them to a Super Bowl because they do have a lot of good players already.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
All right, Mike Sauk's in next. We'll ask him about all this stuff. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
And we welcome in Mike Sauk as we do every day at 12:30. Mikey, how are you doing?
Highlight of my day. What's up?
Is this really the highlight of your day?
Most days.
Is it because you get to unload in a way that you don't normally?
That's right.
Like, this is sanctioned.
This is, this is everything I'm not allowed to do in the rest of my day.
Right.
I can come here and just let loose.
It's too bad you only have 9 minutes to do it.
Mm.
Since the day that Jadeveon Clowney came here, has your perception of him changed more than once in terms of the type of production that he was able to give the Seahawks?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know that I fully know the answer because I hadn't thought about it
until now.
It might
still be changing.
Yeah, it might be. He was in most ways, I think, better than I expect. He plays harder than I realized he did, and I thought more consistently than I think I realized. I thought he was a real addition to what they did. His production also wasn't as gaudy as I thought it would be. I mean, every year he hadn't gotten to 10 sacks, but he was always in that 8.5, 9.5 range. You're like, all right, it wasn't 10, but it was right there. What do you have, 2 or 3 while he was here this year? I mean, he just, as much as he affected the games, he wasn't able to finish it off and get to the quarterback. And so I find myself simultaneously more impressed than I would have expected and in some ways underwhelmed. I think the more impressed, though, takes the day. And listening to the folks that really know football, much more so than I, who study the film and watch and grade it out and see what happens, that dude was good. He didn't get a lot of help, and he had a lot of quarterback pressures and affected the plays even when he wasn't able to get a hand on him and get a sack. And I think long term, you just need to put more pieces around him and allow him to be part of that system. I think the only real worry I have about Jadeveon Clowney is health. That was the main concern about him coming in. And he was hurt much of the time he was here. And even though he was a warrior and played through it, he still got hurt again. And I think that's got to be a question mark about him moving forward.
So are you in the camp of allowing him to have, if the Seahawks retain him, paying a high-priced mark for him?
Because
it's going to be around 2021.
I know it's all the money you didn't spend on Frank Clark, right? Which is,
yes,
which is the thing that's a little hard to swallow, especially as you saw Frank have a good year. I think the reason I'm willing to is, look, I think I was wrong about Frank Clark based on the year he just had and kind of how he's doing. We'll see what happens next year. But I didn't trust the personality. Just didn't.
Yeah.
And you know, the Seahawks can get mad all they want. I watched him cheap shot and cold cock Jermaine Ifedi, and I'll never forget it. That's going to stick with me. Even if it doesn't stick with them, it would have been hard for me to pay him all the money and the long-term commitment that he wanted. He had a great year. What I love about Clowney is he's got the right personality. He's a leader, and I think the right kind of a leader for what Pete and Russell, I think he's a good complementary piece that way. He works hard. He gets to the quarterback, and he also stops the run and sets an edge, which is something they demand out of that position. He's really good. I mean, I think he is a good player for them moving forward and probably worth most of the money they want to pay him. The only problem is just the health risk.
What would you say to people who are nervous, and I have my own response, but who are nervous that you won't be able to get other game-changing pieces if you re-sign Clowney?
Well, I think you can. I mean, I think this is the point is they have enough cap space to do that. They can. So, I mean, I think it helps in some ways, the way the NFL in some ways mirrors the NBA on that of like, hey, let's all gang up together and go somewhere. Like, that's a good idea. Like in the NFL, for whatever reason, I don't like it in the NBA. Just the whole time. I mean, the conference call of LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh is such a turnoff to me. But that's what's happened. And that's sort of the way the culture has changed in that league. Don't you think having a Jadeveon Clowney would make another pass rusher want to play here? Because we know it's hard to do it by yourself, right? It's not like the NBA where somebody's got to get their points. Somebody doesn't have to get their sacks. In fact, you just get double and triple teamed, and unfortunately, Brandon Jackson doesn't do squat on the other side. So if I'm another premier pass rusher, if I'm Vic Beasley or whoever, whatever name you want to choose, yeah, I absolutely want to play with Jadeveon Clowney on the other side.
If they got another pass rusher like that and they retain Clowney, and I know that you want to draft, we'll say, a safety or
sure,
a corner, somebody like that. Let's just say they got those three pieces and basically nothing else hit.
In
the draft, free agency, whatever. Is that enough for them to win a Super Bowl? Let's say everybody comes back healthy. Carson,
it might be pretty close, Tom.
Right.
I mean, you know, based on what we saw and the difference between them and the Niners, yeah, it certainly puts them in the conversation. It doesn't guarantee them a Super Bowl, obviously, but if they fix the pass rush and make more plays in the secondary, yeah, I think that could be enough to get them back to the Super Bowl. And then everything else you do would be gravy on top of that. If you can find another offensive weapon, maybe it's on the outside or a tight end, getting Will Disley back and hopefully healthy for an entire year. They were a much better team in offense with a quality tight end like that, improving the offensive. I mean, there's a million things you can do, but if you can effectively rush the passer and effectively make plays and take the ball away in the secondary, I think, yes, you're a Super Bowl team. Contender.
So something that we're going to talk about, we're talking about Russell Wilson coming up at 1 o'clock and basically, you know, his situation is he asserting himself more in this offseason and doing it publicly in terms of what he wants. And I want to play a couple clips for you that I don't think you've heard yet. So can we play cut number three here? This is him talking with the Pro Football Talk guys about the Chiefs offense and as he's watching it in the 2 minute and all that.
They do a really good job. Andy Reid and Mahomes, they do a really good job of getting up to the ball, playing with their playmakers, and finding a way to make plays. And, you know, they score more points than everybody else. And I think that's the name of the game is, can you score one more point than they do?
Right.
And there's different ways to go about it. Listen, the reality is we've won a lot of football games over the years.
I know. We hold you to a very high standard.
But there's also the expectation of being here. Not just sitting here in this seat next to you guys, unfortunately.
Yeah, right. Being on the big banner here, the Super
Bowl. But being on the big banner and winning it all. So,
yeah.
You know, we're gonna try to figure that out and see if we can get back here quickly.
Does this concern you? Does this concern you that he is saying these types of things?
No, and in fact, the very first thing he said is probably the thing I agree with the most. Did you catch the very first thing he said?
What was that?
Play the
They do a really good job, Andy Reid and Mahomes, they do a really good job of getting up to the ball, playing with their
Just
playing.
Stop right there. They managed to get to the ball! They do a really good job of getting up to the ball. They know what play they want to call. They call it, and then they run a play rather than needing to call a timeout.
Thank you for losing your mind because
it's that
keeps
simple.
Jake from doing it.
It's quite literally that simple. Russell's impressed that the other 31 teams in the league are able to call plays and then run them.
So
me too, Russ. Me too. Sorry, you lost me after that. What else did he say?
Just saying that they play with great tempo.
They do.
And that they do a good job of putting the pressure on other teams and things like that. And ultimately saying they score more points than everybody else. That's how they're winning. And I want to be back in a Super Bowl. I don't want to be sitting here talking to you. So what do you take?
But you can just as easily not be sitting there talking to them because your defense gets better. And in fact, the 2 years that he wouldn't have been talking to them in that spot, it's because his defense carried him all the way there. It's not to say Russ didn't make great plays. He did. But the defense was right there. I have no issues with Russ wanting to be better. He should want to be better. He should want the offense to be better. That's his job. It's also up to Pete and to John to say, I understand that. We rely on you to get a lot of these things done. We'll make sure you have some pieces, and the evolution of DK Metcalf will help. Getting Will Disley back will help. Maybe there is another name. Maybe it is Greg Olsen. Maybe it is E.J. Green. I don't know. That may come in and help. It's not like they're adverse to making their offense better. But at the end of the day, the Seahawks have been their most successful selves when their defense is great. And right now, their offense is close. Their defense is not, and it needs to be in order for them to be back there.
Thanks, Mike, for joining us today.
See you guys.
We appreciate it.
Just see if you can get to the line and call a play. That's all. It's pretty simple.
Love it.
Thanks
Salt.
Russ.
This hour, Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Car Toys. If you're a head coach of a loser, what do you say to that loser? We'll talk about it next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
I've been watching a lot more ESPN lately. I don't know if it's because it's been pouring rain for like 3 months, and I never want to go out when it's dark, like after 6 o'clock. I know if you have kids and you got activities and things like that, you're probably just, you're obligated to do that stuff. I'm not. The only thing I'm obligated to do is to take my dogs in and out every couple of hours.
Dark at 6 o'clock. That'd be great.
What do you mean?
I mean, I'm experiencing darkness out my place at like 4:45,
yeah.
I swear. It's brutal.
I know that, but I'm just saying I'm watching ESPN at those hours after 6.
You are watching them after 6.
It's part of the story. It's part of the buildup. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, thank you.
It's just a joke.
Okay. Anyway, I was watching NFL films, and actually, I'm not really sure what it was. I think it was
just Super Bowl mic'd up.
That's what it was. And I saw George Kittle on the sidelines, and I heard him say this in the wake of the Chiefs championship.
I will be back here. I will be back here. And I will be back with another vengeance.
I will be back here. I will be back here. I will be back here. Now, I credit him for having that kind of attitude, like right as all the confetti is coming down. Like, a lot of guys would run right off the field because they just don't want to see any of this stuff. They just go right to the locker room. I don't blame him for doing that either.
Mm-hmm.
But something about him standing there and watching the Chiefs celebrate told me this guy is that determined. He wants to soak up this moment so that he doesn't have to live through him again. But it also raised some other questions in my mind. If I'm Kyle Shanahan right now, I'm the head coach of a reeling team. What should his message to his team be? Right? He's going to have to say, maybe he's already said something to them, whether it be on the plane or at their headquarters or whatever. I mean, does he have to take Jimmy G aside and say, hey, we just lost this big game. It's your time to step up as a leader. I started wondering how Pete Carroll would handle it. I mean, he already had to handle it with the Seahawks, but with this particular group of players, I thought it was really interesting from those standpoints.
Well, the interesting part about it from Pete Carroll, it's kind of like, and I think this is the part that really frustrated some, is Pete Carroll's like that one family member that just brushes everything under the rug. That you guys could just have this huge disagreement and this fight, and the next day or literally 30 minutes later, they just act like nothing happened. And you're sitting there and you're frustrated and you're upset and you're like, I can't get over this. I need to talk through this. And Pete Carroll is like, no, it's over. It's done. There's nothing we can do about it. I don't want to reflect on that. I've already watched the tape. I can close that chapter and I can move forward because we've got a mission at hand and we're trying to get back in 2015. And there were still other players like Richard Sherman and others that weren't ready to move on from that. And I think that still really bothered them. So for Kyle Shanahan, I think one of the biggest things is, you know, making sure that everybody on the team is on the same page, that there's not a whole lot of, you know, finger pointing, and that honestly the finger pointing can be going to himself and saying, look, there are things about that that I could have done better. But I think Kyle Shanahan has doubled down and said, hey, I think we had opportunities. And he said, Jimmy G to me was a guy that was on his way to win a Super Bowl MVP outside of the fourth quarter. And he's right about that. So I don't think it's necessarily pulling Jimmy aside, because the interesting part about it is those guys really, really liked and gravitated toward Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, remember, Richard Sherman was defending Jimmy Garoppolo to the media at one point during the season.
Yeah, but why was he doing that?
Well, I think that the most important thing, in my opinion, that a coach needs to do in a Super Bowl loss, and I think the same reason why some teams really struggle the following year, is to prevent a fractured locker room, which inevitably I feel like always tends to happen to some degree of severity, whether it's an incredibly deep fracture or whether it's just some unhappiness, it always happens. But I think that one thing that's really important, maybe the most important thing, is finding a way to divert blame. I think that from an outsider's perspective, never having been a part of a locker room, but having covered what I think is one of the more successful cultures in the NFL, I think that one of the most important things you can build as part of your locker room culture is a sense of belief in each other and a buy-in to your system. And that falters when people blame. So when you divert blame, whether you put it on yourself or whether you, like Carroll does, try to move past it, there are going to be some guys that don't like it and they want someone to blame. And sometimes it is someone's fault. You know, it's a bad call, or it's an interception, or it's missed throws. And, you know, if you're Kyle Shanahan, you look at your team and you have to say, I cannot let people blame Jimmy Garoppolo. He's our quarterback. I cannot let people blame the defense for allowing, 21 or 24 unanswered points. I cannot let people blame each other, because the minute they don't believe in each other, that's when we don't get back into games after falling in a hole. That's the minute you have people that are unhappy and resentful and angry. And it makes all the other stuff you have to do with contract negotiations and with roster cuts and all of that stuff hard, because no one's buying in and no one's believing. So diverting blame is the number one thing I think you have to do.
The biggest problem the 49ers have in that respect is that they don't get to go back out right now and have another season,
right,
and prove themselves, like, because they have this long off season where they're probably going to be away from each other. That resentment and all those, that sort of like those dirty thoughts that they're going to have, those bad thoughts about one another, those are going to fester unless they communicate, or Kyle Shanahan,
there's no doubt,
somehow gets them all together and says, hey, like, you know, don't blame this guy, or don't blame this guy, or it's on me, or whatever. If the next season started in like 3 weeks and they had a chance to get right back out there and say, you know what, we're still a good team, we can go out there and win, it wouldn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, they've got so much time in between to think about this. That, to me, is their biggest enemy.
Well,
that's why Russell Wilson in 2015 mm-hmm. got a handful of the Seahawks players together and went on that trip, I think, right, to try to clear all that up.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously that was part of the intention, was to try to get those guys together and get past that and start building towards the next year. No question about that. Going on with what Stacey was talking about, diverting the blame, it really becomes hard to do, because you can sit there and feel really good about things in terms of, okay, we're on the same page, we're ready to move forward. But what happens if, let's say, for example, Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't play good in his first 3 weeks of the season next year. He doesn't get George Kittle the ball on third down when he's wide open again. Those are things that will fester, or that will come to light quicker than they normally do. And so that's something that, as a team, you have to really be mentally tough to not let yourself go there. And just like Stacey was saying, and so, you know, when you look at it from Kyle Shanahan, that is so hard to try and divert that from not just, you know, college football players that you can basically control, and you control basically every single part of their life and their thinking thought process. These are grown men in the NFL. They have their own thoughts, their own way of thinking, and trying to get everybody on the same page, that's going to be a tremendous challenge for them. And that's why the Super Bowl hangover is a very, very real thing.
If you guys haven't, I'm sorry to interrupt, Tom, if you guys haven't seen this Mic'd Up, by the way, I really do recommend it, especially given that the 49ers are in the NFC West, you see them so often, it sometimes helps to add context to a lot of the players that you see regularly. I do think that watching the Mic'd Up of this Super Bowl gave me a new respect for George Kittle. Yeah. And it's not just this moment. I think there are other moments when you watch him encourage Jimmy Garoppolo after a three and out. And I really do think I see him differently after this. The same for Fred Warner. I think those two players made the biggest impact on me in this Mic'd Up. And on the other side of the ball, I have even more respect for Patrick Mahomes after watching this. Some of his Mic'd Up moments were also really interesting.
How about that one where Tyreek Hill even admitted he was sitting on the bench when they were down 20-10 thinking, oh man, this game is over. And then Patrick Mahomes came up to him and he's like, I forget what the exact words were, but he's like, hey, let's get ready to go. Give me your best. Give me your, or something. Yep. It was something like that.
24 years old.
Right, and then they go back. They go right back on the field and then boom.
It's really, really good. I recommend you guys check it out if you haven't yet.
Will Russell's assertiveness be the theme of the offseason? Is he jealous of the Kansas City Chiefs? We're going to listen to some audio on that next. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.